Right, album of the year 2020.
So would you like to do 25 to 5 just to kick off the first hour?
I can do that. I literally could do that.
I know you can. I know you can, that's what I'm saying.
Suppose we might need to have some sort of high energy intro. Let me pour some more of this beer. Welcome to the Album of the Year episode of the Balls Podcast, Dripping Balls. I should have taken an inhalation before I started the sentence. Just run out of air. How the fuck did Darren Lee's like doing all those years?
Hey, Mick Malloy is looking for a co-host, and that sounds like the perfect audition.
I don't look like Jane Kennedy.
Not yet, anyway.
It's going to take a lot of work, either on her or on me. Either way, I'm not fucking Rob Sitch.
Dear. I have a few opening remarks that I sort of... Yeah, 2020 was...
Dog shit!
No! Oh, well, yeah, the year. But the music, right? Like,
not musically. Musically, it was, you know, we'll get into that.
I found with a lot of these albums, and I think it's because I have more of an appreciation for rock, and definitely I'm sort of slowly learning to like, you know, garage punk and, you know, desert rock, and that the genres that you sort of like more, is that I think I like bits of albums that normally I would just not like. And so I got to the end of this process thinking, oh, man, there was a lot of flawed albums. And then I was rethinking it this afternoon thinking, was there a lot of flawed albums, or was there just you appreciated the good songs in those albums where you just would have not even given them a chance in past years? I'm not sure. Not sure about that. So, yeah, there's my opening remarks on 2020, the musical year.
It wasn't shit. It was just that you've realized that you liked more stuff than you previously liked. I found a lot of music that I really liked this year. I genuinely struggled getting from top 30 down to top 20, and then there were, you know, the like 15 albums that could have been in my top 10 and 7 albums that could have been in my top 5. So I enjoyed it. You know, I'm the one asshole who enjoyed 2020, at least in a musical sense.
Yeah, I ended up having a longer short list than I thought I would. So I thought I would really struggle past sort of 6 or 7. But in the end, I did actually have to make a hard decision for album 5. So that I was pretty happy.
Yeah, my
that.
Last cut of the top 5 was pretty tough.
Yeah.
All right, how do you want to do this? Should we just count down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then,
yeah,
and then
so.
Misses and highly commendeds and high profile non-inclusions and things like that? I'm assuming that there'll be something like that.
Are we doing our crap legacy album? There's quite a few of those we can pick.
I meant to spend some time thinking about the categories.
I didn't normally I would like have that down, but I think you just flick through the Google sheet and go this one.
Unfortunately, I only have the shopping list. I only have the list up of the albums that I actually liked this year, so I might actually have to call up the full list of albums just so I've got the record of inclusive of this shit that we didn't actually enjoy.
So I'm gonna drop one of my highly commendeds in here as well, because this the number 5 choice for me was pretty tough. I think I liked the highly commended album less when I first heard it, and it grew on me, and that's Goldmine's Signals.
Yeah.
Which sort of creeped up on me a little bit more when I started getting in my shortlist. But I think this album does have a little bit of diminishing returns in terms of the sheer joy it brings me, but I can vividly remember the first listen of this album and how much fun it was, and that's the Bobby Lee Skin Suit. Just like the capitals are well earned,
yes.
Let's say.
All, you know, caps.
The shouty exuberance. in the name, it comes through the whole album. It's just, I don't know, it's like sheer craziness and a punch in the face all at the same time. It's sort of, you know, getting drunk when you were 22 and just feeling no pain and roaring into the street and just being crazy. Like, it's, I don't know, it's just got this exuberance to it that is hard to explain beyond the sort of musical style.
But it's a dark exuberance, though. I mean, when you say about, you know, getting pissed up at 22 and roaring into the street, I mean, a lot of the songs are about the destructiveness of youth and you know, people dying of drug overdoses and all that sort of stuff. It's like a darker sort of White Stripes album. This actually was the album that was my last cut. It was number 6. It didn't quite make the fire.
Yeah, right.
And I would have loved to have put it in my top 5 because I've really enjoyed the album. This album, I had a subset of albums that were excellent but with a fatal flaw or two, you know. And I feel like this album is in that space, but it's still so brilliantly done. And so it has so much power and energy and just electricity to it that it kind of... it moves past the you know, it moves out of the category of albums that are excellent with a few flaws into just being excellent. But as I say, it just missed my top 5.
I actually thought, like, I had this peg, like when I was just sort of roughly thinking of my top 5 without actually going through the list and looking at stuff, which I got completely wrong. Actually, I thought I had a clear number 1, and then I went back and listened to it, and I actually surprised myself, completely changed my mind after sort of that summer listening.
Do you find with the summer listening you put a higher priority on joy and the kind of the darker and more reflective or political stuff has to struggle a little bit harder to make its to get its value across?
Let's come back to that. Can we park that one until a bit later on?
Absolutely, we can absolutely do that.
I've actually thought about that quite a lot because that is a thing, you know. If you are sitting on a beach, but you know, having a lovely beer and enjoying yourself, it does. Some types of music do lend itself more to that, and I tried very hard not to let that bias me. But anyway,
well,
so what's your number 5?
Last year I was looking at my notes because the notes I'm using, the very first thing in there for this year was the notes from the album of the year episode last year, and it was kind of the tiebreaker that I used last year was joy. It was, does this album actually make me happy? Does this album actually, not just happiness as in joy, but just do I enjoy listening to this? Is this an enjoyable experience?
Mm.
And I also wrestled with the idea of, like, does that just mean you're just giving yourself a whole bunch of sugary pop? And, of course, if I look at my top 10 from last year, it certainly wasn't all sugary pop. My number 1 album was like a Swedish garage punk band playing filthy Motorhead-style noise. But the album I picked at number 5 was probably the album that might be the most just pure fun album that we listened to this year. It was just an unapologetic party album for Wash Gen X's, and that was your man Andy Cooper's Illicit.
Oh, okay, yeah. In my honourable mentions, didn't quite... I think I'm just so conditioned to having that interplay in Ugly Duckling that they just felt like there was something lacking for me in that album.
See, I don't have all the baggage of being deeply into Ugly Duckling, so I'm not judging this against everything that came before. I'm just judging it against everything that it had to compare itself to this year. And it was just, it's just a really fun, it feels like...
It's still a cracking album. It's so much fun.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like a Paul's Boutique for Wash Gen X's. And it's just really enjoyable. This is, you know, the most pure enjoyment based album that I think we listened to this year. Just pure pop, while being golden era hip hop.
And he has an amazing flow. Like his vocal dexterity is just something.
Yeah, he's showing off. He really is showing off.
Yeah. Great life. Yeah. He's been fucking fantastic.
But also self-deprecating and understanding that this is a niche audience. Literally the opening to the first assist track is, I know this is niche as shit and I might be the only person who enjoys it, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah, well, I think you get to the stage of a career where you're sort of making it for yourself and the subset of people that understand what you're about. You know, you're probably not bringing in too many new fans at the stage that he's at in his career.
Can't relate. Totally unfamiliar.
Yeah, the chances of this podcast suddenly, you know, making the top 10 iTunes charts are pretty slim, I think.
Unless we pivot to, like, hard right insurrectionist type stuff, because it sounds like they're running out of platforms to do their shit on. So, up to you with number four.
Well, my number four is probably the most flawed album in my top five, but I just love the high points so much. And this was a case of, I don't actually think this is a great album as an album, but the good songs I love so much that it's going to push its way into the top five. I entered this process like, I'm not putting this album in the top five. It's not a good enough album. She needed to go away and, like, you know, write four more songs, because there's like four really just, they're not bad songs. They're just,
it's not the Sims EP.
And she can write,
because she wrote four more songs. No, she might have actually had an album.
It's not the Sims EP. I did not put any EPs on here. Like, I didn't even sort of, I was going to do like an EP honorable mention, but I thought, nah, it's not even worth it. It's Leon LaHarvis's album. Bittersweet, Can't Fight, Paper Thin, Weird Fishes, I think Please Don't Make Me Cry. There's like, the good songs are so good, and it's just like, what? Take another year and write three more good songs. And
you've got the time, trust me. Okay, you might not know it now, but you will have the time.
And maybe that it's more that I just like those songs and other people would like the other songs. But I don't think so. Like, there's something about the way she plays, and I talked about, you know, how it reminded me of an artist that used to play at the Alley quite a bit. It just really strikes me, and going back and listening to the whole album, I said to myself, you know, this can't make the top five because it's not a good enough album. And then going back, I just enjoy listening to the good songs so much. And I'll listen to the whole album. I'll put the whole album on, and the bad songs aren't bad. They're just boring. And so your brain just switches off when the bad songs are on, and sort of wakes up when, you know, you hear the song that you like again.
That's not how an album is meant to work, but it's your pick.
I know, I realise this. I realise I'm sort of setting myself up for, you know, contempt and mockery. That's okay. I'm hoping that she sort of, like, she's only 24 or something ridiculous. She's really young. I'm hoping that, you know, she gets stronger and stronger as she gets deeper into her career and brings out an album at, you know, at full, you know, brings out that Little Sims type album where it's just, you know, it rips from the first song to the last song. So that's my number four.
Four is Leon LaHarvis's, I can't remember the title.
Yeah, it's self-titled.
Oh, that's a cop out. What a cop out.
It is. First album though, so.
Is it? I thought she'd do.
Self-titled and Colours and Numbers is sort of, you know, not unusual, I guess.
Fucking Spotify Unwrapped tried to tell me that was one of my albums of the year. I was like, your algorithms are wrong, bro.
No.
It was very strange. No. So that gives me number four. And my number four album of the year is, it might be recency bias, but it's Magic Mountain's Weird Feelings, which was this slice of absolute glorious stoner power pop, if you can imagine such a thing. Jumping around and just busting out silly riffs and very incredibly dumb, but just a lot of fun. And again, this kind of fits into that, if it's not fun, I can't be bothered sort of category. I can't really say anything more about it other than it was a lot of fun and I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah, there was a lot of fun stuff this year, I think. Like you said, there was some dark stuff, but there was also a lot of fun stuff. There was a lot of like poppy punk rock or poppy rock, like, you know, guys just having a ball sort of thing. I thought in the list, and maybe that's why I appreciate a lot of, you know, couple of songs on an album, because there seemed to be that vibe a lot more, or at least in what we picked, I guess, because, you know, I'm sure there's lots of doom and gloom fucking albums that we didn't pick. I didn't pick too many indie sad girl albums this year, so that sort of dropped the dropped the dirt.
You just named one, bit, I guess. Number four.
Oh no, she's not. No, she's upbeat. She's not sad indie. She's not Mazzy Star style. Well, I'm going something completely different for number three. This was an album that came through, I think, the son of one of the people I used to food blog with, or I can't remember the exact connection, but I got this message from a Brisbane producer, you know, have a listen to this hip-hop album, was not expecting it to be good at all, just because, you know, a lot of this underground stuff is very hit and miss, and just love this album. This just pressed my buttons. This is 90s Aussie hip-hop in its beats, in its flows. It's a real throwback album. There's a little bit of shit lyricism in it, I guess. But I could just listen to the beats and sort of have the flow, you know, have it on low in the background and just listen to the old school Aussie flow, because Australian rapping doesn't sound like this anymore. It's developed a more polished, poppy sort of radio sound that this stuff would probably never fly, and maybe this is, you know, what this was the sort of stuff that was around a lot when I first got into hip-hop, and maybe that's why it wasn't so radio-friendly, is that it hadn't sort of cleaned up enough for the mainstream to get into it. But, man, this just pushed all my buttons. So, Hash Butter Snitty.
He did finally get around to naming the fucking album.
Number three.
I was wondering if you were going to get to the title.
I was going to get there.
I was scanning the notes to remember whether Hash Butter Synergy was the name of the act or the name of the album. But that's the name of the album, because Hash Finger
Butter and Synergy, I think, is the artist, and Hash Butter Synergy is
there's
the name
are your
of the
three
album.
Briz Vegan MCs busting out some very, very grimy, with a not a capital G, old school Aussie hip hop. So if that's your sound.
Yeah, the beats sound very analog, but it's actually really well put together. Like, it's lo-fi, but not low production values, if that makes sense. You know, the sound is very lo-fi. It doesn't sound polished. It doesn't sound like it's been recorded in a $200,000 studio sort of thing. Yeah, loved it. What's your number three?
Speaking of stuff that was recorded north of the Tweed, and in order to sound like busted ass rubbish from a previous decade, but actually turned out much better than it has any right to. And the only Joker album in my top 20?
Okay.
The Chats, High Risk Behaviour. Now, this was picked as a joke, a little bit like we did with Skepta many years ago. I should hate these people. I should hate their aesthetic. I should hate where they come from. But they have done as good a job as any of capturing the kind of late 70s, early 80s pub punk, you know, piss and vinegar Aussie punk rock sound. And it's really hard to argue. This album, even though I don't want to like the people who make it, and I don't want to like the aesthetic, and the content should be stupid, the album just fucking works. It does exactly what it's supposed to do, and it's got layers to it, which I think is ridiculous to say about a pub punk album. But you keep finding little details that they've hidden in there, and little lyrical ticks, and little the attention to detail is a lot better than it should be for a rat-assed fucking punk three-piece. So I'm amazed to put them in here. But yeah, the Chats, High Risk Behaviour is my number three album of the year.
Well, there's a nice bit of synergy then between our number threes, because they're really sort of throwback to the stuff we liked
yeah.
in the in the late 90s, early 2000s, wouldn't you say?
Mm.
In terms of style.
Although this sound probably goes back even further than that, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so my number two is I went through a little Canadian phase instead of a sad indie girl phase this year. With varying degrees of success, you might say. But the band that really struck at me and the one that when I listened to it at Christmas time, it just went up in my estimation is the Pack AD's It Was Fun While It Lasted. I just fucking injected into my veins. This is just so much fun, this album. Did they mean to be so over the top? I don't know, but I would love to see these guys live. I reckon it'd just be a fucking ripper of a night. And they're a two-piece, aren't they? They're just they're a bit white stripes,
black keys,
white stripes in there.
Yeah. And it's interesting. You've got two acts in your list that are heavily influenced by the White Stripes. I would argue, which is really quite interesting, because I don't think you would have said anything about that sort of sound, say in 2014 before we started doing the pod.
No, and I wasn't even that. Like, I like the White Stripes, but it wasn't my favourite style of music when they were, you know, a really big sort of act. But yeah, I love putting this on loud on headphones or loud in the living room, just sort of cranking it out and just having a great time, which is what I think it's meant for.
Indeed, so. Absolutely. No, it's some really cracking songs on that album.
Good album.
That was that album was in my larger group of albums that I thought were excellent, but just had a few songs that didn't quite hit for me. And because they've got so many albums where, you know, everything hit. Which is, it's a really weird year because there's so many albums where I enjoyed the whole friggin' thing. I couldn't find space for it in kind of the top 20, to be honest. But that doesn't mean it's a bad album. It's a fucking excellent album. My number two album is, I think it's the second album we've had where we've had an artist that's previously... for me, it's a previous number one from years ago, have come back and released a subsequent album. And that's Fuzz's album number three. Their album number two was my number one album of 2015, the first year we did the podcast. Now, this is just, you know, Hendrix, Zeppelin, fucking psychedelic filth. Ty Segall, absolutely deep in his bag where the leftover fries hang out. To paraphrase Mark Jones from ESPN. He's just doing genius work. I enjoyed the fuck out of this. But I enjoyed the fuck out of this band. This is very, very much my very, very much my areas. As we've said before, Fuzz are the most Ron Seal band we've ever listened to, because they literally just make fuzz. They make psychedelic, you know, stoner doom fuzz kind of rock and roll with kind of a psychedelic blues and funk kind of element to it. And that works for me. So
It's interesting because I was sort of I was going through the list and wondering whether we're going to have any overlap, and I'm like, well, I'm pretty sure I know what your top two is going to be, and this is what I had pegged at number two.
I'm not that predictable, am I?
So I'd be interested to see whether I pick the number one.
It should be really difficult. I wonder whether you can.
this was outside my top five. I don't think my brain's quite to where your brain is. do you know what I mean? Like, my brain hasn't changed enough for me to fully appreciate this sort of stuff. I liked it. It was a good album.
Keep in mind, I started with a lot of this stuff. I mean, this is Hendrix and Zeppelin and... Yeah. Cream, apart from another band I might talk about later, that was sort of the stuff I got into first in the mid, when I just started discovering my own tasty music and buying albums. That's what I got into, that kind of sound. And this is a tremendous reimagining of it. It's just really beautifully done.
Yeah.
What's your number one album of the year for 2020, Beezo?
Well, again, this is where I sort of came into this, and I want to get back to that, you know, summer having fun, you know, the vibe sort of influencing, you know, rather than recency bias, but vibe bias.
The vibe. Marbo. Marbo was influencing it. But did Briggs do an album?
The more I was just sort of sitting around going, I've got, you know, half an hour of cooking dinner. What album am I going to put on to listen to you know, not seriously think about, but just to have on because, you know, I've really fucking enjoyed it. More and more I kept coming back to this album. And I did not think this album was going to make my top five when I was thinking about it on the drive home. Drive back to Gladstone. And that's Troy Kingy's The Ghost of Freddie Caesar.
See, that's the album I would have guessed was going to be in your top five. You know, I would have said, you know, if someone asked me, what would you bet would be, you know, if you're going to put money down on one album that was going to make your top five, I definitely would have said Troy Kingy, because it's just you. It is absolutely, it's as much your fucking sound, it's as much your areas as Fuzz is for me, because it just fits exactly in that kind of box of what I know is the stuff that you like.
I thought it was a bit
obvious,
cliched, and
yeah.
No, like even the songwriting, I thought the songwriting was a bit, you know, we're going to do this here and this here, but it's actually fucking a really good album, and it gets into your brain.
It's a really, really good soul funk album. It's really, really good, and if you like soul funk music, you will really, really like this album.
Yeah, it's so much fun, and some of the songs I didn't really like. I'll take that back. Some of the songs that didn't sort of take me the first listen through really grew on me the more and more I listened to it. You know, and I find that sometimes with Fat Freddy's too, where when I start listening to it more and hearing the layers and the instrumentation and the music, you know, the skill and the musicians in the background, because a lot of these bands are huge fucking bands with, you know, a million people playing in them. It just grew on me more and more. Still listening to it now. It's just a cracking album. Now, you could definitely say this has vibe bias because it is a real summer vibe album. However, I spent probably 4 days recovering from a car crash, lying on my back in bed in quite a bit of pain, and I don't know whether this album is the vibe for that, and I still enjoyed listening to it while I was in that state. So
I don't think you want to be shaking your skinny ass while you're lying on a fucking right.
Shaking
bed,
my skinny ass, saying very straight and still.
Immobilize your skinny ass.
Good soul album. Yeah, really good.
Yeah, it's on a lot of like, I mean, it's clearly a tribute album, and the backstory of the album is actually fascinating and dark and really quite brilliant. It actually adds to the fact that it's just brilliantly done. It's just really brilliantly landed. And Troy Kingy's on a bit of a run. He got a swag of like New Zealand Songwriter of the Year awards for the album that came last year, which was more of a political reggae style album. But I'm sure this one will also do exceptionally well.
Mm. Shall we have a double kick drum roll for your album of the year?
So my album of the year, I wasn't actually going to put it number one. I was actually going to almost move it out of the top five entirely, move it out of the countdown entirely. Because it's a little bit like, you know, on the Tour de France, they categorize all the climbs. They have like third category and second category and, you know, first category for the hard ones. And then they have these climbs that are called HC. That's French for hors catégorie, which means outside of categorization. And that's kind of what I feel this album is, because it's definitely my album of the year. But I know that that's not necessarily because of the music. It's because of what this band has meant to me for my entire adult life. It's being the first band that I got into. My album of the year, of course, is AC/DC's Power Up. And it's really, it certainly helps that it's actually an excellent AC/DC album.
Unreasonably so,
given that it's from a band that shouldn't exist, and it's an album that shouldn't exist. and one of the dudes who wrote all the music has been dead for, you know, some time now. But I wonder, I do ask myself, would it have mattered if it hadn't actually been any good? Would it have still automatically just gone there? Because it's a bit like, you know, there's people our age who got deeply into Star Wars and going back and, you know, watching the new Star Wars movies, and like you see Mark Hamill come back and you see Harrison Ford come back and you see, you know, Carrie Fisher when she was in that. And the pull on the heartstrings that comes from seeing these characters has nothing to do with the quality of the art that's been presented. It's entirely about being transported back to the journey that you've gone on with them. And, you know, AC/DC are ancient, decrepit, reprobates and derelicts, but their music has been part of my adult life, you know, since my entire adult life. So it's, and I've got an affection for that sound. And that sound is incredibly calming and reassuring to me. It just feels like musical home, for want of a better word.
I know what you mean.
I can't separate that. So it's almost as though, you know, I almost was going to say, look, my number one album of the year is Fuzz, and AC/DC are my Lifetime Achievement Award winners or something. But in the end, the album that made me the happiest and I got the most joy out of this year was AC/DC's Power Up. So it's my number one album of the year.
I think it's deserved. Like,
it's defensible.
You think how unreal it is. Like, that's like what the Prodigy did, but on steroids. Like, it really is. To be able to pull something out that good that late.
It would be like them doing... It would be like the next Prodigy album being brilliant.
Yeah, I guess so. Which is a bit sad.
Yeah. I mean, even more so because... I mean, Keith, for all his awesomeness, didn't write songs.
Mm. Yeah, so looking back on it, like, I get a little bit, you know, I get to June and I'm like, if I don't have, like, four awesome albums already, I think that the churn of listening to new stuff all the time, you really do need that summer break to go and reflect on some of the albums and actually how good they were and put them in the context of a lot of the stuff that happened through the year. And even some of the ones that didn't make the cut, like Run the Jewels, like I said, Goldmine. Well,
we should talk about our Commendeds and our I was just doing a quick check there and I looked at the rest of my top 10 are the Bobby Lee Skin Suit, Atomic Bitch Waxes, Scorpio, which is just a brilliant cocaine-y stoner rock album, so cocaine-y. It just wasn't enough of it. Like, there were, you know, like, some, clearly they'd written some instrumentals just to fill it out. Mush did an album called 3D Routine, which I loved. It was probably the best Brexit, you know, the State of Britain protest album that was recorded this year, so fuck off, Slow Toy. Sky Valley Mistress, a bunch of Northern England kids who listened to a lot of Queens of the Stone Age, and Naked Six's Lost Art of Conversation. Now, the thing about all those last three, they were all, I think they were all in the first quarter of the year. So I had a couple in my back pocket as we went through the year. So I wasn't, I think you're right in that if you don't have anything, you know, if you get to a certain point of the year and you don't really have anything that you think, you know, that you could, would be a defensible album of the year, you can get a bit desperate with your picks and start making a few speculators. And I feel like, I think you spoke to that this year. You sort of felt like you were taking a lot of Hail Marys. You were making a lot of Hail Mary pass attempts to try and land an album of the year because you weren't that comfortable or confident with what you'd found in the first half of the year.
Yeah. I think I'm going to do like a quarterly review this year. Like, you know, at the quarter mark, try and make time to go back and re-listen to the first quarter and just not be so down that I haven't, you know, haven't found another Little Sims. Like, an album like a Little Sims where it just grabs you from the very first opening bar of the first song and, you know, holds you the whole way through, they don't come along very often. And if you don't like an album as much up front as that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not a great album, because I do think some albums need time to grow on you.
Yeah.
And for you to appreciate the nuances of the songs and the way they put the album together. And there was a lot more of that sort of album this year, I think.
Which is unfair for the albums that come out towards the end of the year. But then again, those albums have recency bias in their favour.
Yeah, what's it been, 4 weeks since we listened to a new album?
Yeah, and Change, something I think. Like that. Yeah.
So, like, I think the first time we did it, it was like 2 weeks between the last, you know, listening to the last album and the year review. And I think we do it a lot better now, where, you know, we give it some breathing room and think about it a bit more and really put it together. So.
Yeah, I don't like the idea. I mean, a lot of people try to rush out their album of the year in November. I feel like in some years we actually did try and get decided upon and the episode recorded and out before like the end of the year.
Like have it out on New Year's Day sort of thing.
Yeah. I actually don't see the point of that. I mean, it means that we're, you know, a month behind the zeitgeist, but since when do we give a fuck about the zeitgeist? And also it gives us an opportunity to fill in that January where there aren't any new albums to actually listen to.
Yeah.
So we should probably talk about some of the big albums that didn't really make our chart. Run the Jewels 4 wasn't in my top 10. What you're talking about backfired, because the more I listened to it, the more I realized this is a really clever, well put together and passionate album, and I don't like listening to it.
I get to the point where I listen to it and I'm like, I'd rather go back and listen to Run the Jewels 3 or 2.
Or Public Enemy's album.
That's
where I ended up. Actually, oh, right. I have them like right next to each other in the kind of the 11 to the 11 to 20 range. But and the Public Enemy album's flawed and it's got bits of tracks on it that they shouldn't have done. But the old heads did such a brilliant job. That was like one of my favorite legacy albums of the year because again, like not to the same extent as AC/DC, but they did come back from essentially the dead in a band sense. And it's certainly the best thing they've released in 20 years.
I had a couple of Witches albums in my honourable mentions.
Lots of Witches.
I remember you not liking either of these albums, I think.
I wasn't that keen on them. Yeah, because we've done a lot of those.
LA Witch and Frankie and the Witchfingers.
Oh, actually, Frankie and the Witchfingers was okay. It was all in Witches. And because Frankie and the Witchfingers is the same, is a similar kind of space to where Magic Mountain is, but Frankie and the Witchfingers is a little bit more kind of, I suppose, Stone Roses writing a song that goes for 9 minutes, kind of putting a bit, certainly leaning on the psychedelic side of it. Definitely not a bad album. And I think the thing is that we don't have albums in common in our top five, but I think more and more the albums that are in your top five are albums that I do in my kind of wider training group or in my sort of top quintile.
We'd have a lot more crossover if we did like a solid top 10 this year.
Yeah. Or if we didn't listen to 100 albums this year, if we listened to 50, we'd be more likely to, but that's the thing.
Yep.
What else?
Any other honorable mentions?
Look, I really, when I listened to it, I really enjoyed Violet Soho's Everything Is A-Okay. And I kind of had that twinned with the Chat's High Risk Behaviour. It's kind of, you know, this is what Brisbane can do. This is what, you know, and although the Chats are actually from 4573 up on the up Coolum Way. Even though I loved the aesthetic drink of the Violent Soho album, some of the songwriting just kind of didn't stick with me. It's just such a brilliantly executed take on kind of, you know, mid-90s Australian grunge. In the end, that, you know, it's just some of the songwriting didn't quite hold out. But that was a solid, you know, a top quintile album. There's quite a few other albums I liked, but I won't be naming albums forever. Do you have any other albums that you wanted to shout out?
No, I've got a couple of like worst legacy albums of the year. just flicking through the thing. I think John Legend's album would be pretty close. That was fucking terrible. R&B.
Wet. It was just damp. It's pointlessly damp.
I can't remember exactly what it sounded like, but I can remember really disliking the LaRue album, which is disappointing because I quite like their early stuff.
And I think the logic behind that was
isn't that another one where half the band's pissed off?
Yeah. Because LaRue had been kind of a two-hander, and then the dude who wrote all the songs fucked off. It was a little bit like Roxette, but if the dude had left,
yeah.
We did listen to some soppy trash at the start of the year, like the Cortinas and Bombay Bicycle Club, and there was some embarrassing stuff. That J.O. Electronica album wasn't worth all the chat. It wasn't anywhere near as good as it should have been, or it was purported to be.
But I think we can both agree on just being absolutely fucking baffled by the hype around Lime Cordiale.
God, no. They're fucking terrible. They're just the worst. I don't understand
it. I don't understand that. That's where I genuinely feel like old. It's like, because I know heaps of young people that like that album, and I just don't understand why. I think Kruder and Dorfmeister would be my favorite sort of legacy non-top five album.
Yeah, I mean,
thoroughly enjoyed it, but I just don't think it's a good enough album to be in the top five.
Yeah, but
I still enjoyed it.
It does exactly. I mean, it's an old kind of legacy album in that it is literally something that they put together when they were in the moment, when they were great.
Yep.
It's almost more like releasing a whole lot of unreleased B sides. Yeah, I don't know who I'd pick as I guess my legacy act of the year. If you don't count AC/DC,
is your number one?
I'd say Public Enemy. Because that was a really, really – because it's the kind of – that's what I love to see out of a legacy band is when they come back from being way out in the wilderness and they come back and they just deliver something that's as good as they ever did. And then, you know, that's, as I say, that's the best Public Enemy album since the last time they were on Def Jam in the late 90s. So yeah. My Joker album of the year is obviously The Chats because that was the only Joker album that made it. What was your EP of the year? Did you actually decide on one? I remember the Boys album was quite good.
I really like that Little Sims EP.
I
actually think it was perfect for an EP. It didn't have that feel of it felt like I've got these songs lying around. They don't really fit into a narrative because she quite likes to do narrative albums. Like, you know, she likes her album to have a sort of through line, and these just felt like, oh, I've got these bangers laying around. Let's just bring out an EP.
I'm in lockdown. I've got nothing else to do. And be done with
it, sort of thing. Because there was no through line to any of the songs. They were just songs. But new Little Sims works well for me.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I should mention that you mentioned that Goldmines album twice, and I should say that was in my top 20. That's a good album.
Yeah, they're another one a little bit like Leanne the Harvest, where I'm sort of like, mark these guys down. Let's see what they do next time.
Yeah, because that was a debut.
It sounds like they've got a bit more exploring to do of what they can do. And it might, you know, sometimes that goes badly. But those two bands or artists, I sort of feel like there's a bit more there to be had.
Yeah,
highly commended.
I'm trying to find the worst legacy act of the year, and I can't find one. I really don't think we didn't do too many of them. Deftones probably.
Deftones was pretty bad. John Legend was pretty bad.
Yeah, particularly because they came out as being like fucking insane conspiratorial dickheads afterwards. Like 5G gives you COVID kind of people.
That Vicar and Linda album was pretty bad.
It was exactly what it was supposed to be, though. I mean, I didn't.
Well, it was supposed to be. I just didn't enjoy it. Yeah, that Deftones album was really not enjoyable at all, was it?
It was deeply indifferent. It was just not.
What was the I think the worst album we listened to? Who was the hip hop album with all the guests on it? Was that it wasn't A. Swayze. Who was it?
Not H. Was it?
West Side Gun.
I didn't enjoy that at all. That was
I think that might be the worst album of the year. That was genuinely fucking...
That was unpleasant.
Hard to listen to.
I mean, the Lime Cordiale album was insipid and just pathetic, but West Side Gun was genuinely unpleasant to listen to. It was just obnoxious and hateful and misogynistic and violent and stupid.
There was one song that was really fucking misogynistic, and I just was like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
I don't care how much we should be listening to the whole album. You can get fucked, mate.
Yeah, I bailed right out of that one. It was the same track, I think. We pulled the ripcord. The most hyped album that wasn't worth it was definitely that J Electronica album, and, of course, Lime Cordiale, because that was dog shit. But yeah, another fun year on the internet, listening to music for free. Well, technically we pay for the Spotify, but and the hosting fees for the podcast.
Not bad. Not bad. Over 100 new albums.
Yeah, we did well. That's 100 new, and then we had and now that's down to the Joker. More than often than not, the Joker has been a new album rather than a classic. Yep.
And I need to use that a little bit more this year, and like, you know, those where I stretch, you know, where I go for let's just go for something bizarre to see whether it works. That's probably what the Joker's for, and think about a little bit more the stuff that I actually want to listen to for my albums.
Yeah, for sure. 103 new albums, plus another 18 classics, or, you know, not new albums, we'll call them, rather than calling them classics, because there was some weird shit in there.
Legacy albums that we thought were worth a listen.
Yeah. Some of them were classic albums. Some of them were not necessarily that classic. Transvision Vamp, you know. That really, 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 really wasn't.
That was like you trying to talk to a teenage Adam, because Adam just basically regressed back into being a teenager. Was some funny shit, I have to say.
Well, yeah, because he'd previously picked Poison's Open Up and... No, you'd picked Poison's Open Up and Say Ah. That's right.
Oh, I picked Poison, yeah.
Yeah, which was worth it. It was worth listening to. Anyway, so the new albums will be back. I imagine we haven't talked about this. We'll have a production meeting on the podcast. We probably need another week or two to get a few more new albums through the system.
Yeah, I was going to say, I flicked through the new albums this afternoon and there's not much there.
Yeah, there's not a lot going on. So I was thinking for next week, again, tapping into something that was in the zeitgeist about a month ago. There was a lot of chat on the Twitters about three album runs, about, you know, what artists had the best three album runs. And this is something I've been thinking about, and it's something that maybe we could do something about. If you're interested, maybe we could come up with a few contenders, each of us, and we'll sit down in next week's episode of Tripping Bulls and throw them up in the air and see which ones we would both endorse, if we can come up with a consensus top five three album runs, artists that have managed to release three excellent albums. So this is more than just having a classic album. This is, were they able to keep it up across a sustained period?
Yeah, I've got a few. I did see those tweets and had a bit of a think about it. You know, there's one that I think sort of in my mind to me stands out more, but and I guess you'll have quite a few from sort of more the 70s rock era.
Yeah, but if we can't convince each other, then they're not going on the consensus list. That's why I thought it might be interesting as a podcast. And it also require us not to actually listen to any new music, because we can do it all off the top of our head. This counts as off-season content.
Good stuff. All right. Thanks, Doc. It was a good year in music. Yeah, I look forward to us talking about Taylor Swift's run next week.
Fantastic.
See you, dude.
Cheers, man.
Talk into that. Say hi, Dr. Yobbo.
Hi, Dr. Yobbo.
And say, what's your favourite song from the last 12 months? Quick.
My favourite song is... what is it called? Chicken Stop the Rock.
Oh, Stop the Rock, Apollo
4. Stop the Rock!
Okay, you'll go.
Hi, Dr. Yobbo. Hi, Dr. Yobbo.
Yeah, what's your favourite song, Ray?
My favourite song is Chicken Wing.
Ah, okay.
Wait, is he going through the headphones?
Mm-hmm. Just talking on that.
Hello, Dr. Yobbo. My favourite song was Chicken Wing by the Ricky Desktop.
Okay, two chicken wings. All right, thanks, boys. Can you close that door on your way out?
See ya. See ya. Deadly. Bye. Bye. Don't say you're at home. I'm just starting. Bye. Don't say you're at home. Bye, Dr. Yabo.
Your phone. I took it out.
Bye, Dr. Yabo.
On the
bye. I didn't hear any of that. I was setting up my,
look, it
I
makes,
was resetting everything that I'd changed since the last time I recorded because I was using a different mic and everything.
Well, we had one good vote for a favourite song of last year and two terrible ones, so you can listen to.
How's that going to be any different from an actual podcast? You can't stop the rock, 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 you can't stop the rock.